We know that you rely on our team at 1A and everyone at NPR to provide up-to-the-moment updates, context, and discussion on the news that's happening all over the world in what can feel sometimes like a never-ending barrage of major issues that require a lot of attention and focus and understanding and concentration. And now, we are relying on you. Every penny you put into us is put into making this service better for you. Individual donors like you are the single largest source of station funding. So join those who believe in our journalism and our commitment to the facts and civil, calm conversation. Go to donate.npr.org/1A to make a gift. Your financial support connects you and me to the rest of the world. That's part of our mission here at 1A and NPR, to bring you conversations with the best writers, thinkers, business leaders, politicians on the subjects that really matter. If you value that service and the place that public radio has in your heart and in your mind, then please show us. Visit donate.npr.org/1A to give. Thanks. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Do you hear what I hear? It's just about all you hear this time of year. Out shopping, at a holiday party, or even on those rare occasions when you flip to some other radio station. Holiday music is in Billboard's top 25 right now, alongside brand new pop hits. Many of these are classic singles from Andy Williams or a certain relatively newer hit from Mariah Carey. These songs represent something that the music industry wants desperately these days: to sell physical records. Streaming sites are less lucrative, but it's no surprise to find curated holiday tunes in your workout mix this time of year. What makes Christmas such a musical holiday? Where are the hit songs for Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or Easter? And with decades of standards already recorded, why make a new Christmas album? Joining us here in studio is Elahe Izadi, pop culture writer for The Washington Post. Elahe, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us from NPR in New York is Chris Malanfi, a pop critic and chart analyst. He writes the series Why Is This Song Number One for Slate Magazine, and he hosts their podcast, Hit Parade. Chris, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
We're talking about holiday music. We might as well begin with the elephant in the room. It's hard to talk about it this year without mentioning one song in particular.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you'd drop in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my
ice.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your
my
hurry?
My father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
now
roar.
Now really, I've got to scurry.
Beautiful, please don't hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink
put
more.
Put some records on while I pour.
The neighbors might
but
think.
Baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in the street?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how
eyes are like starlight now.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no,
mind
sir.
If I move in closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't
oh,
stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Oh,
baby,
it's cold outside.
That's Dinah Shore and Buddy Clark singing Baby, It's Cold Outside, a classic written by Frank Lesser back in 1944. It won the Academy Award for Best Original Song in 1949 for its inclusion in the movie Neptune's Daughter. Elahe, there's been a lot of controversy around this and the question of consent in this song. This song has evolved over the years. Apparently, Frank Lesser wrote it as a song to sing with his wife at the end of holiday parties. It was one of those things that got them invited to parties, and then eventually he sold the rights to MGM. What do you make of the debate around Baby, It's Cold Outside?
Yeah, so this debate is getting increased in tension in recent years over the consensual or non-consensual nature of this conversation that's occurring between the man and the woman in the song. And, you know, a lot of people point to its beginnings to argue that it is completely consensual. It was sung between a husband and wife at parties. But in the song, you hear a conversation between a man and a woman, and he's trying to get her to stay, saying it's too cold outside, and she's protesting, saying, I should go, I should go. Now, some would point to the context in which this song came out and was written as almost like a sign of female empowerment, because a lot of her protestations have to do with her trying to protect her reputation, that it was inappropriate for a woman to stay the night over at her fiance or boyfriend's house, and that he's kind of giving her a reason or ways to stay. But in this new era now, where we're really focused and having more conversations around consent, especially with the Me Too movement, these lyrics don't sit well with many people. A radio station in Cleveland announced that it wasn't going to play this song anymore. Another radio station in Kentucky said, well, we're going to have a marathon of this song, kind of caught in the culture wars.
Right.
But really, it's just kind of highlighting this conversation around old art and whether our norms and sensibilities have evolved and whether it's time to re-examine them.
And then another radio station in San Francisco said they were not going to play the song, then engaged the audience and decided to re-add it to their playlist. Chris Melanthry, what do you think about the controversy around this? There have been some folks who argue that Baby It's Cold Outside is a more forward-thinking song than it may appear to us in 2018.
I mean, I have been persuaded by some of the articles I've been reading recently that the song is more, dare I say it, feminist than initially might be perceived at the surface level of the lyrics. So you kind of can't win on this one, because there are people who argue somewhat persuasively that in a Me Too movement, regardless of the deeper intention of the song, the lyric just comes off as tone deaf by modern standards. And then there are others who say, but if you're really listening to the lyrics and putting it in context, as Elahe pointed out, it really is actually quite empowered, particularly for the time. But that's not how Christmas music works on the radio at this time of year. It's meant to be just a wonderful background accompaniment for, you know, your shopping trips or your, you know, playing in the car.
Right.
So it's a tough call, I think.
So is it time, Elahe, to put this song behind us?
Well, one of the things about holiday music and Christmas music in particular is that, you know, the appeal is nostalgia. So this song, there's a lot of nostalgia wrapped up in it. I don't think it's going to go away. And now it's become, as Chris mentioned, a flashpoint, a hill to die on for people to argue about. But it is kind of, you know, we're having a conversation around consent, a sexual relationship at Christmas time. And, you know, I've read things where people are saying, you know, I have to now explain this to my child. And yeah. Is this really a conversation you're ready to have at that moment?
We
Maybe it is a conversation you should have.
We were worried about talking about the midterms over the Christmas dinner table. Now we got to talk about a song over the Christmas dinner
table. Right. And you have to argue about it.
Chris, what do you think? Is it time to put this song behind us? Or maybe is there a better context, a better place, so that this song can kind of exist in its historical context, but maybe not on contemporary radio?
I'm just hoping that this year, 2018, is sort of the peak of the culture war over this song, and that it can kind of be permanently placed into, let's call it, low to medium rotation. There are so many Christmas songs, right? This does not have to dominate playlists. It doesn't, you know, it's not currently in the top 40 right now. There are many different versions. If it wants to be part of the, you know, holiday panoply, I think that's fine. But I would like it if folks were neither tallying up whether, hey, has it been multiple days since I've heard it? I'm offended that I haven't heard it, versus those who are offended that they hear it at all. By 2020, it would be nice if we had gotten past, you know, analyzing it at that level.
Chris, dig a little bit more into why this is important from an economic standpoint. I mean, these Christmas songs, Christmas albums, setting Baby It's Cold Outside aside, there is a significant economic impact of Christmas, as we can see on the Billboard charts.
You know, this is big business, because these records, they sell. The albums sell, you know, they're one of the last kind of album that still sells.
Right.
I just did a check of the literally in the last 24 hours, Billboard updated its charts for the week. And on the album chart, basically, whether you look at the version of the album chart that tracks streaming or the version that just tracks sales, Christmas albums now make up a quarter of the chart, no matter how you cut it. Top 10, top 40,
right.
Top 200.
I do want to talk more about who's buying these albums when we continue our conversation with Chris Melanthry and Elahe Izadi. I'm Joshua Johnson, and mixed in with all that music, you're also listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Hinge. Hinge is the dating app that's great at one thing, setting you up on great dates. And they're not just saying that. On Hinge, 3 out of 4 first dates lead to second dates. They are the number one mobile first dating app mentioned in the New York Times wedding section. So if you're looking for a BFF, a job, a pen pal, or a hookup, Hinge isn't the place for you. Hinge is exclusively designed to get you out on great dates. Download Hinge in the Apple Store or Google Play.
Life Kit is like your friend with all the best tips, except your friend's probably not one of the best investors on the planet who can talk you out of really bad investment ideas. What would you say to me?
Sit down and shut up.
Life Kit. Check it out on Apple Podcasts or at npr.org/lifekit.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. It's the most wonderful time of the year for radio and for music companies who are trying to sell new albums. We're talking about the business and artistry of holiday music. We asked you for some of your favorite holiday albums. Here's some of what you left in our inbox.
This is Chino from Durham, North Carolina. My favorite Christmas album is Christmas on Death Row. The vocals are melodious, the instrumentation is awesome, and the best version ever sung of Oh Holy Night was by Michelle Lee.
This is Shannon from Alexandria, Virginia. The Christmas album that I have to listen to every year is John Denver and the Muppets. Listening to Miss Piggy sing The 12 Days of Christmas is something that always brings a laugh to myself.
This is Leslie in Sacramento, California. The best Christmas album I've bought in years is Christmas with PJ Morton. It's a wonderful R&B Christmas album. Check it out.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening in the land? Snow is glistening. Beautiful sight. Happy tonight. Walking in the winter wonderland.
Thank you very much for sharing your favorites with us. And funny you should mention that last one, because joining us now from Marketplace in Los Angeles is PJ Morton, musician whose latest album, as you heard, is Christmas with PJ Morton. He is also the keyboard player for Maroon 5. PJ, welcome back to 1A.
Hey, good to be here, man.
What made you decide to do a Christmas album this year?
Well, it was a combination of things. I'm one of those guys who just loves Christmas music, so I've always wanted to do it. But there's definitely this unique space you got to find where people are paying attention enough to whatever else you got going on to care enough about a Christmas record. And, you know, we've had some success with my album Gumbo getting 2 Grammy nominations last year, and now Gumbo Unplugged has kind of performed better than that. And I had this gap where I'm like, I know I don't want to put out a new record yet, but I do want to give my fans and supporters something. And I decided it's time, man. It's time to do this Christmas record. So I did.
How did you decide which tracks to put on this album?
That was always a combination. You know, I just listed all my favorite songs, and then I went through them. And then the way I eliminated some was I had to be able to bring something fresh enough to it, you know, bring enough to it that was my own language to record it. So some of my favorites didn't even make it because it's like I can't bring anything new to this and make it feel like myself. So, you know, it's a combination. Some of it was tempo. I went and flipped something reggae. Some were closer to originals, but it felt like it was coming from me. I think that's why I called it Christmas with PJ Morton too, because I really wanted for people who are fans of what I do, they're fans of this Christmas record because it is unashamedly me, you know.
Now you also have 2 original songs on the album. Let's hear a piece of one of the songs. This is PJ Morton with "Do You Believe."
Chosen one. Some people say
You Believe by PJ Morton, one of the two original tracks on his new album. Tell me how you came upon this song, Do You Believe?
It's actually a song that I wrote some years ago for Yolanda Adams. I didn't remember that I wrote written it for her, but when I sent it to her again for this, she said, oh yeah, I remember you sending this some years ago. And I hadn't remembered that, but I knew that I wanted to do at least one gospel song on the album. I grew up a preacher's kid, and you know, for me, Christmas was tied to church in a big way. We went to church every morning after we were able to open one gift. So I knew that I wanted to do a gospel record, and I had to rewrite a couple of lyrics. But yeah, that's I thought of the gospel songs that existed, the gospel Christmas songs that existed, and none of them felt right. So I said, you know, I think this one is going to be an original. And I called up Miss Yolanda Adams, and she was happy to do it.
Before we bring back Elahe Izadi and Chris Melanfi into the conversation, PJ, I wonder also, just in terms of the economics of Christmas music, I'm looking at the Billboard Hot 100, and top of the charts is Thank You Next by Ariana Grande, not a Christmas song. Scroll down a little further, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year by Andy Williams is number 13. Jingle Bell Rock by Bobby Helms is number 15. I never knew the name of the guy who sang Jingle Bell Rock until I looked at the Billboard 100 right now. Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree by Brenda Lee is number 18. There must also be an economic part of putting out one of these new albums, the potential that one of those tracks could be the next All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think doing all I, you know, being able to redo what All I Want for Christmas is definitely a rare thing. You know, what Mariah has done in making a new classic is just very hard to do. But I do think there's definitely some economics to it. It's keeping the fans engaged. You know, like I said, if they're already paying attention, then this just gives them something else to purchase. So, definitely economics connected to it as well.
Before we dig deeper into the song, we should hear a little piece of it. Here is the original version, climbing the Billboard charts as we speak. Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. First of all, apologies to those of you who will have this song stuck in your head for the rest of your life. But we have to talk about it, Elahe, particularly the people that a hit like this appeals to.
That's right. I mean, part of the commercial equation here around Christmas music is radio play. More than 500 radio stations every year switch to an all-holiday format. And you may think that the majority of those listeners are older folks, baby boomers and older. Not the case. It's mostly actually millennials and Gen Xers. They make up the majority. In fact, any one generation, if you had to pick one, millennials are the biggest listeners of Christmas music. Maybe it has to do with nostalgia. Maybe they're most likely to be the parents of young children who like Christmas music. But it is not the case that when you're older, you're more likely necessarily to listen to Christmas music. And one other interesting thing about Mariah Carey's Christmas album is she cut that record at a time when her career was at her peak. And she was at first hesitant whether to put out a Christmas album because that had, at least at that point, tended to be something that an artist would do when they're sort of in the twilight of their career. So right. She kind of hesitated whether she should put out this Christmas song and this Christmas album. And, you know, she decorated her home. I think it was summer when she was, it wasn't the Christmas time when she was writing this song, and she put up decorations to kind of get that feeling and that vibe. And my theory around Christmas music is the easiest route to conveying Christmas vibes, the inclusion of jingle bells.
Yes. Got to have a little jingle bells in there. Now, PJ had mentioned gospel music, and there's something you can't really ignore about Christmas, which is the religious aspect of it. Here is one particular such track from Pentatonix.
The first Noel the angels did say was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they
Chris, I know we have to pause in just a moment, but as we hear Pentatonix version of Noel, how do these more religious Christmas tracks stack up against the secular hits before we pause?
The secular hits generally do better on the charts just because they can be played more widely and they are, you know, streamed and purchased more widely. But, you know, Pentatonix, they are kind of the MVPs of Christmas of this decade, you might argue them, and maybe Michael Bublé in terms of acts that sell Christmas records en masse. Their Christmas albums, and they've recorded more than one, have come back. And the inclusion of religious songs like The First Noel is just smart, you know, branding and breadth on their part, in the sense that they show they can do it all and make it all sound reasonably current.
We're glad to hear from those of you who listen to holiday music for different holidays. Michael emailed, "There is a tradition among Jewish musicians to change the wording to popular pop songs so they're about Hanukkah. Every Hanukkah, our family waits with bated breath to hear the new tune from the Maccabees and others. It's part of the fun of the holiday season." We'll talk about some more of your Christmas favorites, including some that you were brave enough to sing for us. We'll have a good old-fashioned Christmas sing-along in just a minute. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Capital One. Here's Sarah Strauss, head of fraud at Capital One, on how the CreditWise app helps users take action after receiving one of its automatic credit alerts.
It's not just an alert, but it's also, here are the next steps that we recommend you do. And so hopefully that's giving our users the opportunity to feel empowered to go after the issue and resolve it.
CreditWise is free for everyone, whether you're a Capital One customer or not. You can find CreditWise in your app or Play Store now.
Hey, just a quick reminder, your support is what keeps 1A and NPR on the air. We provide that rare space that promotes open dialogue, where everyone feels welcome and everyone feels heard. We are in no one's pocket but the pocket of those who keep us going. That's you. So please, make a donation at donate.npr.org/1A. Thanks. Back now to our conversation. Courtney emailed, "You are missing one of the greatest Christmas songs ever. It's Bare Naked Ladies' God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. It's my favorite." Then again, some of you are maybe getting a little more holiday music than you can handle. Robert emailed, "I enjoy Christmas music, but there should be a rule that it cannot be played before Thanksgiving." I am with you on that one, Robert. I totally, yes. We also heard what some of you had to sing. We asked you to use our app, 1A Vox Pop, to sing us your favorite Christmas songs. Here's some of what we heard.
"I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day.
Kick it, Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, had a very shiny nose, ha 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 ha. And if you ever saw him, you would even say it glows, ha ha ha.
You're cuddly as a cactus, charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
He Pete as a mean Thurl Ravenscroft. Yeah. That's pretty good. Although I'm still digging Rudolph the Red-Nosed. This is probably the greatest thing we've done on 1A. PJ, I wonder how much when you are composing these songs just has to do with making sure they're singable, something that people can kind of, you know, pop their fingers with in the car and can hum along.
There's a reason why these songs have been around forever. They're just really perfectly written, you know, you know, from the lyrics to the melody is just so perfect that I don't like to mess with it that much. You know, I'll mess with the way I do the beat or the tempo, but that melody and lyric I like to stay pretty close to.
All right, here's a bit of Tyler the Creator singing "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch" from this year's remake of The Grinch.
You're a mean one. Greasy black peel. You're a vile one. You got termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile.
Mr. Grinch, you're a foul one. Friends you don't have none.
I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. You're a monster.
Tyler, the Creator, with "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch" from this year's remake of The Grinch from 2018 with Benedict Cumberbatch as the voice of the Grinch. But I don't know. I feel like you almost have to know the original for this to land.
Well, first of all, who hasn't heard the original? Even little kids, you know? And that one kind of slaps, not going to lie. It's pretty catchy. And you can look down the list of hip-hop artists in the past 20, 30 years. So many of them have actually put together new Christmas songs. I mean, Trick Daddy has a Christmas album. It didn't sell that well, but he has a Christmas album. Snoop Dogg has a Christmas song. You name the artist, and they, especially in hip-hop, I mean, it's one of those things where you can kind of bring a bit of playfulness to a cover or an original, like Run DMC's Christmas song.
Speaking of more modern holiday music, Sia released a holiday album. Here is a track by Sia called "Santa's Coming for Us." Every now and then I get to be a DJ on 1A. That was Sia with "Santa's Coming for Us" from her album in 2017. PJ Morton, I think one of the cool things that has happened with, whether it's tracks like "Christmas in Hollenbeck" or "Santa's Coming for Us" or even this remake of The Grinch, is it helps to kind of diversify Christmas music, because Christmas is a very kind of Norman Rockwell holiday in America in many ways. And a lot of the Christmas music is very Bing Crosby, Andy Williams, stereotypical Norman Rockwell, and I don't know, a little diversity in the way that Christmas sounds. I think it's healthy.
I do think it makes it interesting, you know, because we do want those classics. But, you know, a little diversity and making it exciting and hearing something new to mix in with the classics, I think is healthy, too. I agree with that.
Michelle tweeted, "Got to talk about Donny Hathaway's This Christmas." And Alahe, mm-hmm. I hear that this is one of your favorites, too.
How much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, the fireside is blazing bright. We're caroling through the night. And this Christmas will be a very special Christmas.
This Christmas by Donny Hathaway. Alahe, what is it about this song that you love?
Yeah, I love this song. I mean, I think part of it is the hopeful nature and almost defiance within it, declaring that this Christmas is going to be a good Christmas. But I also love how this song feels partly like a romantic Christmas song, but also when I hear it, I think of a large family getting together too. So it can kind of play both ends. You know, there are a lot of romantic Christmas songs, and there's ones that just feel really joyful, like a big party. And this, to me, kind of has both in one.
Chris, there was a track you suggested, and also Susie tweeted the same suggestion. She writes, "I wait to hear every year Christmas rapping by the Waitresses." Christmas rapping by the Waitresses. Chris, what is it about this that you love?
You know, it's the ultimate new wave Christmas song. It is, you know, time stamped and very specific to a very, you know, particular moment in the 80s, early MTV, you know, early college alternative rock, the deadpan vocal by the lead singer, Patty Donahue. Every Christmas you hear Christmas rapping. And, you know, I'm not sure we even got to the chant part of the song where she just says, "Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, but I think I'll miss this one this year," which is kind of the best hook, you know. And I, as a teenager, I remember hearing, what's that song that's just called "Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas"? It took me a few years to even figure out that it was called Christmas rapping, because it's not something they say, right, I think, even at all during the record. But it's just wonderfully, look, I'm a Gen Xer. I was born in the early 70s. This is as perfect as the nostalgia gets for me. And, you know, everything from the new wave sax that pops up to punctuate every chorus to, you know, the deadpan new wave vocal. It's as 80s as a record gets.
I got to say, before we go, Megan probably tweeted about one of my very favorite Christmas albums. Megan tweeted, "The best Christmas album is A Charlie Brown Christmas by Vince Guaraldi." Christmas Time is here from A Charlie Brown Christmas by the Vince Guaraldi Trio. PJ Morton, I know we're low on time, but I wonder where you hear the sound of Christmas music going from here. What's the next step in its evolution before we go?
Well, I do think that the classics will always be there. I mean, like I said, there's a reason they've been here. I think they'll always be here. But I think we'll also continue to see innovation and keeping it exciting. And, you know, adding the new elements of wherever music is at the time, whether it be hip hop elements and other things, I think it'll keep growing as well to balance it out.
PJ Morton, keyboard player for Maroon 5. His latest album is Christmas with PJ Morton. PJ, thanks for spending this time with us.
Oh, good to be with you, man.
Chris Melanfi, pop critic and chart analyst and host of the podcast Hit Parade from Slate. Chris, thank you.
This was a blast. Thank you.
And Alahe Izadi, pop culture writer for The Washington Post. Thanks, Alahe.
Thanks for having me.
As we go out with another one of PJ's tracks, I should remind you that you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or any app you like. And because it is the season of goodwill, we'd love it if you'd write us a review. You'll find all the links to listen online at npr.org/1A. This oh-so-musical conversation was produced by Gabe Bullard. To learn more about him and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for singing along. This is 1A.